You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We're talking about human trafficking, the second most profitable criminal enterprise in the world. It's estimated to rake in $32 billion a year. To bring awareness to the issue, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California, Melinda Haig, read aloud a few of the state's cases that are under litigation.
Here are just a few examples. United States versus Alvarez and Contreras. These defendants were convicted in connection with a scheme to recruit young, unsophisticated workers from a poor area of Mexico and lure them here with promises of jobs, better living conditions, and educational opportunities. Once in the U.S., however, these victims lived in squalor in a garage and worked long hours for little pay. United States versus Mahender Singh and Helen Singh. These defendants recruited teenage girls by promising money and a, quote, family-like atmosphere. Once the girls were in their clutches, however, the defendants maintained their control with force and threats of force and by fostering a climate of fear. They used the internet to advertise the services of their prostitution enterprise, which spanned from Sacramento to the San Francisco Bay Area. United States versus Valletto and Pierman. These gentlemen were charged in July of 2013 in connection with allegedly operating a large-scale marijuana grow in Lake County and keeping a 15-year-old girl in a so-called torture box.
That was Melinda Haig, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California. We had more questions about how law enforcement is combating the trafficking issue locally, so KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with Sergeant Tony Flores, who works with the Special Victims Unit at the San Francisco Police Department. He asked him what the department is looking for to determine if someone's being trafficked.
It's something that just doesn't look right. And we all see it. We kind of sometimes put our head in the sand, but sometimes when we're there, you're seeing it right in front of you. And it's basically their demeanor, that somebody's that, you know, they're very quiet, they're very timid. Sometimes, you know, though, if you're asking them a question, I'll give you an example. So we do, once a month, we do massage inspections with the Department of Public Health, building inspectors, fire department.
At different parlors around San Francisco?
Yes. Yes. And we'll do these inspections, and this is where I will engage with the folks that are working there. And I'm asking them questions, and the questions that I'm asking them is, do you have your passport? Do you have your ID? If no, you know, okay, who has it? Oh, this other person. Well, why do they have your identification? Well, they said that I need to give it to them. Okay, all right. Do you sleep here? Yes, I do sleep here. Okay, all right. And are you fed here? Yes, but I have to pay for my food. And what if you don't have any money? Well, then I owe on the books. Okay, all right. And how many hours do you work? Oh, I work about maybe 14, 15 hours. Then you go inside and you're seeing these.
They could often be coached, I would imagine, on exactly what they should say. And they know the people who have forced them to be here perhaps much better than they know you.
Well aware of that. And you'll see, and back to initially was, how do I know? You're looking at this person, trying to look them in the eyes, and they're looking down, or they look over at the person, looking at them for that response. I call it my father look. And you know exactly what I mean by that. It's like, you know, when you're in trouble, you said something, he gives you that look like, no, we're not going to beat you now. You're in trouble when we get out of here, when nobody else can see you. So when I see those indicators, or when we hear those indicators, you know, we definitely kind of react to them. I'll give them something to contact me, or I have their contact number, and I'll say, hey, maybe I'll call you later on when we're not here. Because inside those places, everything's being recorded.
Exactly. There's probably cameras there.
There are cameras all over the place.
It must be a really delicate moment when you have that recognition of a situation that seems like it could be trafficking, and you're trying to communicate to the person who is the victim without tipping off or changing what's happening for the criminal.
You know, I'm a jokester. You know, I laugh at life all the time. The hardest part for me is to walk out of that place. and know I left somebody, and I know they wanted to go.
That's Sergeant Tony Flores with the Special Victims Unit for the San Francisco Police Department. Massage parlors are legal, and vending on street corners is pretty commonplace. How do you know, as just an average person walking around or seeing these places, which ones are shadier?
I think the best one, I think, would be, and I'm not telling anybody to go out there and, you know, be the law enforcement or take legal action, but it's when you're engaging, you know, you walk by somebody, you say hello, and you say, hey, how's it going? Oh, good. You've been, you know, have that conversation. Have that, as I give them 10 minutes.
Be human.
Give them 10 minutes.
San Francisco is a sanctuary city, but federally, the laws are a bit different. There's a reason why it's a sanctuary city. So what kind of rights can you offer to these people so that they could, let's say that you were able to just speak frankly with them and establish trust and say, this is what you can do and this is how long you can stay here. What exactly is the process then that people can count on from the city of San Francisco?
So now that we've identified, now that we're able to communicate with this individual and say, what's going on? And they tell us about these crimes that are going on. And as soon as I do, I said, tell you what, you know, you are a candidate to get this U visa, which gives the individual temporary residency within the United States. But it's not us that are giving them this. It's literally Homeland Security. And what it is if you are a victim of a crime within the United States, you're entitled to apply for this application. I'm telling them, hey, you have this right because you're a victim here, and that your helpfulness in this investigation, which normally you wouldn't have came forward to me and told me this because of your fear, and that is one of the fears that the controllers will use, is that if you say anything, I'm going to have you deported. If you say anything, I know you're here, but your family over here, they're going to get deported. So they'll use this tool, and it's a powerful tool. You know that fear, especially if you came from a country where they were torturing you or torturing your family or you escaped from that. You know, it means a lot. But they're exposing themselves to Homeland Security. You're saying, here I am. This is me. I came here, but I was a victim of a crime.
Does that mean that Homeland Security then will make the determination of whether it's valid or not to give them the U visa?
Absolutely.
Well, so some people could get deported when they apply for it.
No, they don't. They don't. If that was the case, I'd probably have less on my desk than I do now. And the captain of Special Victims Unit, the two lieutenants and myself are able to review these applications, and we'll look at them. I'll make my determination. I'll kind of get in hold of the inspector or sergeant that's handling the case. Hey, this person just applied for it. Were they cooperative? Were they helpful? What's the status of the case? And they'll say, yeah, you know, it was good. Or no, they lied about the whole thing. And, you know, I'll put a little note on that and send it back. Or say the case was filed with the DA's office and then it's moving forward. And then I'll call the DA's office. I'll say, hey, we had this one. I'm forwarding it to you because you still, that was our handshake agreement, is that anything that they had, they would go ahead. And when we've gone to have several cases that maybe gone to trial or something like that, and this is brought up, well, the only reason you're testifying is because you wanted this U visa. And what I try to explain to them is, again, they could have just said, they don't have to be here. They have to help us, but what's the difference with saying, hey, I was beat up by an unknown person and call it a day, and you would still be eligible to get a U visa. And that's all you had to say. But again, the fraud is very minimal.
And you've never come across in your experience that when somebody's applied for a U visa with a case in which they were victim of a crime that they've been deported?
No. And trust me, I would have heard about it because I work with a lot of immigration attorneys and a lot of nonprofit groups, and we talk and all the time, constantly, every day we're talking, and I would have heard about it.
That's Sergeant Tony Flores with the Special Victims Unit at the San Francisco Police Department. He was speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. Sergeant Flores handled more than 50 trafficking cases last year. He recently helped bust a corner street fruit vending operation that trafficked Mexican teenagers.
Imagine that you're a 15-year-old kid that was smuggled within the United States, and no matter what we say, that fear sets in and says, hey, you know what? Something's bad's going to happen to me. The cops are corrupt. If you say anything, they're just going to throw you in jail and you're never going to see anybody again.
You can hear the story of how the SFPD discovered the operation, built trust with the victims, and solved the crime at our website, kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents.